ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
It's amazing how many books Srila Prabhupada was able to publish before he left. It was just within a short amount of time. When he first came to America, he had the easy journey to other planets. He had a manuscript for the Bhagavad Gita, and he also had the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in three volumes. And actually, when I was writing my book and doing research, I was interviewing a lot of devotees. One of the devotees I was interviewing was Brahmananda, probably one of Prabhupada's first disciples, if not the first disciple that he had. And Brahmananda Prabhu was telling me that the first canto of the Bhagavatam that you have all seen, it's the cover is brown. Actually, originally there was a dust cover on it. It was very beautifully illustrated with the spiritual planets on it. The original Bhagavatam that Prabhupada brought from India when he came. And when Prabhupada came to America for the first time on the freighter called the Jaladuta, this is not a passenger ship, certainly not a luxury liner, he had loaded on the ship crates, not crates, but large boxes, trunks, full of these Bhagavatam sets. And he arrived in America, of course. I always wondered where he kept those, because when you're traveling, you know, bringing large trunks with you can be problematic. And Brahmananda let me know that the Scindia Steamship Company that gave him free passage, actually it was the owner of the company, Sumati Murarji, who gave him free passage on that ship, also had some storage area in New York City. And she also provided for that. So he kept the Bhagavatams there until he got established. Brahmananda said he remembered that he and Gargamuni would bind them together with string, which I see a lot of devotees doing nowadays. They're putting together stacks of books. But some of them were missing because Prabhupada had already distributed some. In any case, he said that Prabhupada was watching them tie up these Bhagavatams and was appreciating them, getting them ready for distribution there in New York. But Brahmananda told me also that before Prabhupada had come to America, one of the sets of Bhagavatams actually had been going all over India by himself, distributing his books, Back to God in magazine at first, and then he had the Bhagavatam, and he was selling what he called standing orders, which means people would buy the first canto of the Bhagavatam, but Prabhupada then promised him that he would come out with the rest later. And he went all over the place by himself. He went up into Kashmir even. And there was even a Muslim university there that he sold a set of Bhagavatams to. And later on, I learned this part from some of the devotees from the Bhaktivedanta Library Party who had gone after Prabhupada, and they were amazed at how many places Prabhupada had gone by himself to distribute his books. So one of the places was in Delhi, and it was called the Library of Congress. If you go to Washington, D.C., you'll see a huge building. Have you been there?
Oh, we're going to.
Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. You've been there? I like that place.
I haven't been inside, but I've seen it.
You've seen it from the outside? Yeah, it's quite a spectacle. It goes on for blocks. This is the Library of Congress, and it has branches all over the world. So one of them is in Delhi. And Prabhupada had sold 16 sets of his Bhagavatams to the Library of Congress. And they, in turn, distributed them to the various other libraries around the world. So before Prabhupada arrived in America, his Bhagavatams already came. And one of them was in the New York Public Library. And Prabhupada went in there and found it in there. It had been directly sent there by the Library of Congress in Delhi. due to his own work. We don't know what circuitous route these books take when we distribute them here, there, and everywhere, but they always take some route. Krishna knows. We can only know anecdotally how they're affecting people. In fact, Vijay Prabhu is just putting out a new book, just full of anecdotes of how people have been individually affected by reading his books. But if you then extrapolate and think about what that might do, if you increase that, there's a law in mathematics called the law of large numbers. You know about this, mathematicians? It's the law says that the more times you perform an experiment that's an accurate experiment, the more you're going to see the actual result. So if you flip a coin twice and it lands heads twice, you can conclusively say that actually it's not a 50-50 chance, right? Say no. Go no. Why would, on what basis would you say no?
The fact that it landed twice on heads and not heads and tip and not once.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, what theory would you put forward? Yes?
Experimental probability.
I was looking for the law of large numbers. But I like your answer too, because that was nice. Just said the law of large numbers says that if you do it 100 times and 1,000 times, then you'll start to see, it'll start coming closer to that actual result. So in a similar way, whether it's analogous or not, I still like the idea. The more you distribute books, the more you're going to actually see the effect, ultimately. If you do it on a small level, it may be harder to see, but the more you increase the volume, the more you'll see it. So Brahmananda told me that was Prabhupada's entertainment. That's the words Brahmananda used. He said, and he was there with Prabhupada personally, just serving him. And he said Prabhupada used to take 3 bus transfers. It means at that time, you'd put some coins in a little box and they'd give you a transfer slip. That meant you could get on the next bus and the next bus to go where you're going in New York City. And there was Prabhupada by himself going on several buses to get to that library, to walk in, to see his books in there. And what a victory that was, just that they had penetrated the airspace and made it there. This is indicative of the power of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental vibration itself. Once it enters, it's too late. The damage is done. It's like you can't take it back, because it's Krishna. Krishna enters the mouth of Agasura, if you read in the 10th canto, and then he just expands and kills Agasura. And similarly, we see when Krishna appeared as the Matsya incarnation, he was a little fish, and he got King Satyavrata, take me home. And he kept growing, growing, growing. That happens in our life too. He's just like, well, it's just a little thing, but then it becomes everything. And that's what happens. So Prabhupada said that he told Shruti Kirti Prabhu that one day, he said, every day I write something. And he said, drops a day, and he used this several times. I saw him do it when he was talking about being consistent with your practice. He said, drops a day, and he would go like this with his hand, drops a day, wear the stone away. He said, look how many books we now have. And he said, I've done this because I write something every day. And it was, if I may use the word again, painstaking, that he would sacrifice all else, especially sleep, which is something that is very difficult to give up. It's impossible, actually, unless you're not connected to this world at all. But he did that in order to produce these books. So what I've always felt when I'm reading Prabhupada's books, and it's the only individual instruction I ever got from Prabhupada, he's told me to read his books. And that was in the context of being introduced to him as a book distributor. And he said, you must also read my books. I've not written them just for selling. I've written them to be for you to read and become pure devotee and go back to Godhead. That's what he said. So what I've always felt was, if I can't write books like that, at least I could try to invest the same kind of enthusiasm and consistency, consistent practice into reading his books as a way to reciprocate, because every author hopes that somebody, there's an audience there that will read what he or she has written. And this is a relationship, actually, between the author and the reader. So one of the ways in which we, as industrious human beings, can invest our energies is to think, how much did Prabhupada put into writing his books? It's not just sitting writing, either. I mean, I've only written one book and published it. And when I finished writing, which was, I must say, like trying to swim across an ocean, is at first when I started writing, you know, I was facing blank pages. And writers, at least, okay, I'll speak for myself. When I was writing, I faced a lot of self-doubt. It's like, there's a little voice inside my head saying, you can't write. And, you know, every sentence I wrote is, go, this is terrible. No one, you know, this is, it's useless. There's always that. And it's fairly typical. I've read a lot about it. In fact, I read the most about it when I was procrastinating not writing my book. Because that's one of the best ways to procrastinate not writing is to read books about how to write. And the best of them say, you know, get out of here, go back and write. And after I'd finished writing, I had to actually shut down everything for 9 months, because I was around the periphery until Neera Akula, my wife, and my best friend Keshav Bharti Maharaj, who also was my editor, told me, you know, you're fooling yourself. Unless you stop traveling, unless you stop doing everything else and just focus on this, you'll never finish it. So they put me under house arrest. The two of them, they conspired. And she, you know, it was a hard offer to refuse, because Nirkula was cooking and my best friend Keshav Bharti Maharaj was with me practically constantly. You know, if it wasn't in our house, then we'd be there together on Skype talking about the writings and so forth. But when I finished, it was just as Prabhupada had said. He said it was like conquering an empire, finishing one book. But that was just the beginning. And my point was, once I finished the writing, you might think, it's just a book. You know, there's a cover and there's other features to it. But that part is just as, if not more onerous than writing the book itself. Because, you know, working with publishers, the layout, there are, just as when if any of you have ever remodeled your house or started, you know, you just think, yeah, we'll just remodel the house. But contractors practically live with you. And every 5 minutes they're coming and saying, you know, the tile isn't available in white, you know, it's going to be available in pink and, you know, whatever. Can you live with that? It's like, no, I can't live with that. Then we're going to have to readjust everything. And it's similar, you know, making a book. So Prabhupada oversaw that too. When the Krishna book came out, he was the one who recruited the artists. In fact, he had plans going in his head, and he enacted them to make sure that the books were self-published. In fact, did you know this? When in America, Prabhupada had received this order from his guru at Radhakund. You know, you ask your guru at Radhakund, what do you want me to do? And his guru said, if you ever get money, print books. I mean, Prabhupada took that to heart. So when he came to America and it actually started getting some traction, he had disciples that were they had surrendered and they were working for him. And there was just a tiny little bit of money coming in from various parts of the country. And what did Prabhupada want to do with that money? He wanted it all to be pooled so they could buy a house. And why did he want it? The specific reason was he wanted to put a printing press inside. And that's what he did. He got a printing press and he put it inside Beacon Street, Boston. That's the first house that ISKCON ever owned anywhere. And it was purchased. And one of the devotees, who was an expert builder, had to come there and reinforce the floor so the printing press didn't cave in the building. Meanwhile, Prabhupada had sent out six of his disciples in New York City to learn the art of printing. And just recently, I had an overwhelmingly spiritually enlivening experience when I was in India with our yatra. And we went to Calcutta, which, by the way, out of all the holy places we went, Calcutta was the best. Because we went to Prabhupada's school, we went to the place where he used to live, where he'd worship his deities and family deities, and so forth. And then we went to the Bhagbazar Gaudiya Math. That was the flagship temple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the guru of Srila Prabhupada. And there, I wanted this particular, I mean, just seeing the place of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was edifying in the extreme, but then I specifically wanted to see the printing press, because the printing press is something that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta emphasized. When he designed the logo for his organization, the Gaudiya Math, he put an image of the printing press as among other images. And not only that, he established the printing press right near the deities. This was to express how this was also Ragmarg, the worship of transcendental literature and the distribution of literature. It was a very high path of sadhana, and that it was worshipable, the whole process. And so I wasn't anywhere to be seen, but there was a huge door, and in Bengali it said that, you know, the printing press had been there. So we had to do a lot of communicating with the devotees who run the mat there. And finally, you know, some of our very expert devotees had made friends with some of them, who contacted others, and they finally called the right person, who said that, "I'll show you the printing press, but only a couple of you can come." And she had to, you know, she told them that I was a disciple of Prabhupada and that I had dedicated my life to just selling his books and so forth. And so, you know, it took a while. It was about an hour before someone came to show us. So what it turns out is they're building a museum and it's not finished yet. It's right next to the Bhagbazar. But they took us up in the museum in an elevator, and the construction's going on everywhere. But we went up to the top floor, and there was the printing press, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's printing press. When I saw it, I spontaneously offered my obeisances on the ground to the printing press. And I remembered how Prabhupada had done that too when he first saw the printing press in Beacon Street. And he had offered his respectful obeisance to his spiritual master. But that was only half of it. I walked around to the opposite side of the printing press, and it's a beautiful press, actually, but on it I saw that it was made in Cleveland, Ohio. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had gone to the ends of the earth to invest in technology, that was high technology at the time, to get everything needed in order to broadcast the message of Lord Chaitanya in writing. And so the entire process of printing, that Prabhupada, the writing the books, yes, obviously it requires a full investment of one's consciousness to write. And then to get it published, actually. And Prabhupada was doing it single-handedly. Imagine that. And you know, he got his own printing press. It didn't work so well, so he started and he went to Dai Nippon in Japan. And then the Krishna book got printed there. So did the TLC. I mean, there's a lot of details. A lot of it's in my book. I couldn't include all of it because it wasn't about just a comprehensive history. It was meant to give some clear indication about the importance of doing this work. So, anyway, in the last few paragraphs, I was just trying to illustrate how dedicated Prabhupada was to writing and getting it out there to the people. But he also wanted everyone to read the book. So we can invest as much energy, or at least some of our energy every day, to read these books. And you know, when you look at all the volumes of the Bhagavatam, you might think, that's a lot to read. And it's easy enough to just put it off for one day, isn't it? Is it possible? You can put off your reading for one day because you have a lot of other things to do? Please say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Is it possible to do it for 2 days?
Yes.
How about a week?
Yes.
How about 1 month? What is your name?
Rishi.
Rishi? Jishnu. Jishnu, I like that name.
That's no, a Rishi.
This is Rishi?
No, that's Rishi.
Jishnu? Rishi?
Ishu.
And Ishu?
Isha.
Okay. What is your opinion?
Yeah.
Could somebody procrastinate for a month and not read? Yeah. Oh, give them the mic. I want this to be...
Yes.
Is it possible then somebody could do it for 6 months? Does not read.
No.
It's not possible? You come from a good family, I'll tell you. It's possible to go for 6 months, a year. It's the logic I'm trying to follow here. Here's what I'm trying to follow. If you can do it for a day, you can do it for 6 months, and you can do it for a year. I mean, what's the difference between a day and a year, really? Unless you have some system to overcome the procrastination and do it. So it's just a very practical matter. I've always been interested in reading Prabhupada's books. I did before I joined the movement. It's really what drew me in. And then I've tried to read as much as possible. But at a certain point, I realized it could be a lot more, and it could be much more systematic. And I was listening to a motivational speaker one day, and he said, any task can be divided into smaller parts and then achieved. And then it just dawned on me, it was Krishna's arrangement, how I could apply that to reading Prabhupada's books. So then I said, of course, well, I have to very practically look at them and see how much is here. So then I thought, by pages. So Srivas Pandit Prabhu helped me count up all the pages in all the Prabhupada's books. And then we started making charts and saying, well, okay, how many pages are in the Bhagavatam? And if there are a finite number of pages, then I should be able to do this if I divide it up into smaller parts. Then I made a graph. And on the graph, it showed how many pages I have to read if I wanted to finish the Bhagavatam in 1 month. How many pages do you think that is? It's 502. That seemed a bit extreme for one day. In fact, we've experimented. We do every year in Govardhan. We sit down for Kartik and we just read Bhagavatam all day, about 5 to 7 hours. And, you know, we've never really gone past 140 pages. So the 502, that's for, like, maybe you guys. But then when you start looking at other scenarios, like how could you do it in 9 months? Could you do it in a year? Could you read the Bhagavatam in a year? What would that feel like if you finished the Bhagavatam in a year? Okay, maybe you're busy in your life right now. How about 5 years? I mean, you're still going to be 5 years older in 5 years anyway. But if you finish the Bhagavatam in 5 years, what difference will it make in your life? Every difference in the world, every difference in the world. You will not be the same person. Spiritually, you'll evolve very quickly if you apply yourself to it. So then we said, okay, what does it take? You know, for 1 year, it's 41 pages. It's very practical, you know. And then how would you read 41 pages? You go down to the Office Depot and you get those little stickers and you write 41 on one of those. You know those stickers you can put in and take out if you're reading from a book? And you just write 41 on it. And then you count 41 pages. You put it in there. You get a do not disturb sign while you're at it. And just say, you know, when I finish this, then I can move on to other things. Otherwise, until then, you know, everything, I'm dead to the world. Don't even talk to me. And if you do that, what difference will it make in your sadhana? And if you do it at the level of, you know, 5 years, how many pages a day is it? 5 years?
Five, I think.
Yeah, it's 8 pages a day. That's absolutely doable. In fact, it's maybe too little, too few pages, because you need momentum. You need something really to consume your life. So pick 2 years or 3 or 4 or something like that. And make a big deal out of it, because if you do, then it will drive a wedge into the various calcified anxieties in your life, and it will break them up and open for you a new life. So anyway, I can ramble on here forever, as you can probably tell, but I would like to hear from you. If you have some thoughts, means any reflections of things you heard, principles or ideas that you picked up so far that you think are valuable, or you could ask a question and I will try to answer it. Yes. You're Jishnu. It's a cool name.
Thank you, Maharaj. Earlier you had mentioned how in the beginning, the early days in ISV, bystanders would walk by and they would be like, whoa, or they would be startled. How do we have that renewed startled feeling, that fresh feeling every day?
Well, you know, actually even more than that, I noticed one day that one of our devotees who had been introduced to Sankirtan, as we started at ISV in a small way, a simple way, by a few of us, we only had a few of us going out for a book distribution. And when new people would come, we'd introduce them to the idea that this is what the Krishna consciousness movement is. It means to go out and meet people and do a good deed by sharing with them the transcendental literature and make friends. And so I saw one of the newcomers who had been in our organization just a few weeks, and he had been on Sankirtan, and he had such an exhilarating experience that we were sitting in the Bhagavad Gita class in the evening one day, which was only one day a week. It was every Wednesday we'd have. Because in a household or community, you can't expect everybody to be there every day for Mangal Artik and everything, and every single class. You have to organize in such a way that everyone can stay close enough to at least the five most important limbs of the 64 of bhakti so that they can make advancement. So anyway, I was watching as I was giving class, and this new person saw somebody look in and have that startled look, like, what is this? And try to read one of the pamphlets we had attached to the in a little container outside the door. And then they started to walk off. And nobody prompted this person, but he jumped up and ran out with a book, you know, and met him in the other person in the parking lot, because he didn't want to let him get away. I mean, in a way that, like, this is so good, I have to share it. And I saw it was spontaneous. And Prabhupada said to Karandar Prabhu, who was one of the earlier successful managers in ISKCON. He was a very bright person. Prabhupada liked him very much. He said, as far as management goes, you should, as a manager, create an environment in which the devotees do service that's individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. Everyone say, individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. And then he also said, you should always create a fresh challenge. Fresh challenge. So that they'll want to rise up and meet it. That's the duty of a manager, to do that kind of, or a leader-manager, to create that kind of environment for people. So Sankirtan does that, and also hearing and chanting together. In fact, they're inseparable. And, you know, Sankirtan means hearing and chanting, because if you don't hear and chant, you don't have much to distribute. When you read Prabhupada's books, and you're hearing sufficiently, it's so astoundingly real and commonsensical even, that it just makes perfect sense to distribute it to other people. If you don't read and chant and you don't have a taste for it, then you might start thinking, well, why sell Bhagavad Gita? Why not sell soap and a rope or something like that? You know, you can come up with millions of other ideas of things to do or sell, unless you're really enlivened about the Bhagavad Gita. So that freshness really comes from hearing and chanting together. That's the genesis of everything. Increase the hearing and chanting. Increase your own reading time and chant Hare Krishna, remembering that you're connecting directly with Krishna. Other questions or comments?
Maharaj, many a times...
I think you have to turn that on.
Maharaj, many times it happens that the number of pages that we read is more random rather than specific number because of the scheduled data. Is it something, is that okay? Or it's very important to have a specific number?
I find it important to have a specific number. Randomness tends to, because the mind is so tricky that randomness can lead to a long hiatus. I may think, oh, that wasn't very much, but then actually you look down and you go, hey, I'm already elderly and I forgot to practice Krishna consciousness. Really, it happens. You know, if you're systematic about this, is called Sankhya Purvaka, as it's mentioned by Srinivasacharya in his poem about the Six Goswami, Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi Kalavasani Kritao. He's saying that they showed the example how to practice sadhana. And it's to count it. Sankhya means to count. Count it. In fact, that's what the meaning is. They counted everything they did. They counted how many times they chanted. I mean, if you see somebody walk in here with a bead bag, but it doesn't have counter beads, what do you think? CIA. Because it's like there's a devotee with a bead bag with no counter beads. It's like, are they wearing a wire or something like that? They're not really a devotee. They're pulling some kind of scam. I mean, it just makes sense. You have a bead bag, you put counter beads. So if you have books, why wouldn't you count it? So it makes a huge difference because you can make progress. I've noticed, even in book distribution, over the years, I started in 1973 and I've seen it evolve in different ways. And I remember the marathons. And, devotees would go all out for the, in fact, in one marathon, I can't resist telling stories, but in St. Louis, there was a prize for who, and they, for that marathon, they said, whoever stays out the longest hours, that was the criterion. You stay out the longest hours on Sankirtan, you win the prize. Prabhupada's prize was Prabhupada's dhoti. And so one devotee won, and it surprised everybody, but later he admitted that he cheated because he got a hotel room and just stayed So he had to give the dhoti up and gave the prize back. And the point I bring that up is not just because it's humorous, but also because I saw in marathons, devotees would kill themselves practically, and then they'd take the next 3 months off. And I always just stayed steady, and I did whatever I was doing anyway because I figured my life was like kind of like a marathon anyhow. And then I just stayed steady through the marathon. I didn't overexert myself. Sorry for anybody who worships the marathon, but I mean I do too. But at the same time, I saw and I calculated with my Sankirtan leader Suradas Prabhu. He said your scores are better because you went into January, February, March. And you kept going. Everybody else just dropped it. They slept for 3 months. And so the steadiness in anything you do, any service, if you figure out how to stay yukta or balanced. In fact, devotional service itself, it's not measured by how you do in 5 years or 10 years. We really look at the lifetime portfolio. How did you do all the way to the end? That's what really counts. And how did you do at the end also? I mean, a really successful human life means like you invest at a level that you can actually do, but you do it consistently. In fact, I feel consistency is king because, first of all, you can't fake it. You can remain consistent when you have a certain amount of devotional determination in your heart, and that's a rare commodity. Otherwise, you're all over the place. But to stay steady and show up for your service no matter what. And it doesn't matter how grand it is, but if you're steady, that has an impact like anything. Like Prabhupada said, drops a day, wear the stone away. That's why we don't do sadhana every other day. It's too long of a gap. It really is, because there's a way in which the material world is so, the modes are so relentless. Joshua Hevitz, famous violinist. Where is she? Here's another violinist, right? You know Joshua Hevitz? Famous violinist. People come from all over the world to listen to this violinist play. I mean, it's sheer genius and just moving and So he said once that if I don't practice one day, I notice it. He said, if I don't practice 2 days, my teacher notices it. He said, if I don't practice 3 days, the whole world notices it. And similarly in sadhana, you'll notice it if you don't practice 1 day. If you don't practice 2 days, then your mentors will start noticing. And if you don't practice 3, it becomes obvious. You know, that you put out a different vibration. Just like somebody eats garlic and they come into a room that people were there, they don't eat garlic, and all of a sudden everyone turns around and is like, where have you been? You know, what's wrong with you? And it's very subtle, but it's true. So, you know, of all the different kinds of practices, if you can lock in the Bhagavatam as one of the parts of your reading, or any of Prabhupada's books, but especially Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion. If you have a system, you know, and the system is so tight that if I wake you up at 1 o'clock in the morning and I say, when are you going to finish the Bhagavatam? And you're able to tell me, I guarantee you, if you have that much precision in the way you've designed your reading, that every day when you wake up, you'll feel an extra impetus in your life because you're going somewhere. That's real happiness, actually. Happiness comes from having the right goal and having intensity for it. It's not just having the right goal. So a lot of people have good goals, but intensity. Devotional service is about intensity. That's what makes us happy as living entities. We don't like mediocre life. But if you're not intense about reading Bhagavatam, then you'll have to be intense about something else. That's why people go to baseball games. They're waiting for it to be the bottom of the ninth in the World Series, you know, and it's the last game, and it's the count is 3-2. Sorry for all you cricketers out there. And you know, it's the last pitch comes in, and the ball, and you watch it going over the fence, and you know the crowd goes wild, and it's like they put their life into practicing throughout their childhood to get on that. You know, get up to bat for that. And the people, too, they've been, you know, waiting for this for years. And, you know, the emotion, the intensity comes out. That's what makes us happy, is to live in intensity. So you can do that in devotional service. And so self-align yourself with that intensity for Bhagavatam and study. And then you'll actually be happy. And then your life becomes exciting at every moment. You have to live on the edge to be happy. Don't play it safe and try to have too much comfort in the material world. Try to be a little edgy, because then if you're taking risks, then you're actually in a good zone. Taking risks for Krishna, that is. I like to say that you should feel comfortable outside your comfort zone. That's when you feel comfortable. And when you get in your comfort zone, you should start feeling a little uncomfortable. It's like, I don't feel so good right now. I know I'm in my comfort zone. Let me get out of it. So push yourself a little bit, but not too much, not in a way that you get out of balance. Krishna says this in the Gita, yukta hara viharasya, yukta chesasya karmasu, yukta swapna vabodasya, yoga bhavati dukaha. Be yukta, balanced in everything you do, but do add in things that necessarily keep you on that edge. And that's one of the things that is unassailable, is this reading of Bhagavatam. It'll change everybody around you too. My friend Satyadev Prabhu and I, whenever we travel together, mostly in Japan these days, but you know, when we do our chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day, we chant at least one chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day out loud together. And you know, I would just remember times years ago, we'd get into the ashram, we'd get our bags put away, and then we'd sit down and we'd do our chat. And then, you know, everybody else in the ashram would come in, what are you all doing? You know, can we listen too? And after 3 days of doing it, then the whole ashram starts to change and buzz. Just because that one simple activity, it only takes 15 minutes. But what a 15 minutes that is. When two people decide together to read the Bhagavad Gita out loud, at least all the verses. I mean, it just changes everything. So we have 30 more seconds if you have one last point. Yes, Prabhu. 1, 2. 15 seconds each. Or 14. Leave me 2 seconds to answer.
Is there a difference, like, in reading from book or online? Also, I would like to know some guidelines. I have already got many, but like when to read, and is it important to recite prayer or reading? Like, is it important to sing bhajans before or after reading, things like that?
No, yes, 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 and yes. If you remember the questions, you can line them up later. Prabhu. Yes, prayers are important. Prayers are very beautiful. Srimad Gauror Ashtakami Terusha Brahme Mahute Pratita Prayatna Yastena Vrindavananata Sakshad Sevayeva Labhya Janashunta Eva. You know what that verse is? Who knows what that verse is? It's the last verse. Well, close. Yes, you say. It's the last verse in the Gauravashtakam. You think the last verse is Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. But there's another word. Srimad Gauror Ashtakam Etarusha Brahme Muhurte Patita Prayatna Yastena Vrindavana Natha Sakshad Sevai Valabhya Jana Shonte Eva. This verse says anyone who recites these verses to the Guru during Brahma Muhurta hour goes back to Godhead. So a little boy heard this. This is the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And somehow or other, he made it from his village all the way to the Gaudiya Mutt. And he came into the Mangalartik, and all the big sannyasis were going, what the little kid doing here? And afterwards, they said, you know, little boy, where are you from? And he named his village, which was miles away. And they said, how'd you, you know, get here? And he walked. And he said, why'd you come? And he said, because I heard someone say that if you come to the Mangalartik during Brahma Muhurta hour, that you go back to Godhead. So they introduced him to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, get him a bicycle so he can come whenever he wants. And he sheltered that kid and let him come anytime. So these prayers, if you sing the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, every song he ever wrote is a hit. And every song you sing from Bhaktivinoda Thakur will open for you a window to the spiritual world. And so these are vital. If you can develop a spiritual diet, this is your own personal bhajan. It's like your diet. If you have a bad diet, you're going to get all scrawny and weak. In fact, the Chaitanya Charitamrita says this, that those who have a mode of goodness diet, they're very careful about their diet, they have very beautiful bodies. It's a verse from one of the Puranas, and it's in another context. But Prabhupada uses it in his purport to say, unless the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement read all the books published, he said, then they'll become anemic and they'll fall away from the process of Krishna Consciousness. And I know this to be true, this diet thing from when I was in third grade. We had a science fair. And my friend in school, Ricky Masano, he did a science project. He was a skinny guy. And he looked very unhealthy. He was so skinny. People used to tease him all the time. So he got two white laboratory rats, you know the kind, and he put them in two separate cages, and one of the rats he fed all the best kind of food possible, and the other he gave him what he used to eat, which was white bread. It was called Wonder Bread. They advertised that it built strong bodies 9 ways, but I don't think it was true judging from Ricky Masano. So after 3 months, he brought his white rats to the science fair. He won that year, by the way. And the one rat he had given a diet, the nice diet to, he was super rat. I mean, he looked like he could take on anybody. Put him up against any rat in the world. And the other rat looked just like Ricky. And after that, Ricky started eating better. And in a similar way, if you don't hear and chant, well, let's put it in the positive. If you make a nice diet for yourself of these prayers, you read a significant amount every day, or at least be consistent, and you do good rounds, you focus, you're going to be spiritually strong, and you'll look spiritually strong, and you'll know it for yourself. No one will have to give you a certificate. And similarly, if you don't, then really after some time you get skinny. People look at you and go, like, what happened to you? Or they'll actually even say it to your face. They'll say it to their, like, what happened to him? And that's what happens. So make a good diet. If you read online, digital's okay. In book form, whatever gets you there is what really counts. Whatever way you can find your rhythm and actually do it consistently. We really should end, so we'll take one more.
So my question is on bridge books.
Bridge books, yes.
That we distribute during book distribution.
Uh-huh.
So generally, I feel that I'm more attached to Prabhupada's books, especially Bhagavad Gita, when it comes to book table distributing books. But I see all the time we in the bookshelf we have several other books, and we have books like Vegetarianism, Glories of Glorious India, and all that. Is it required for us at any point, like, come out of Bhagavad Gita or Prabhupada's basic books and take those books and show them? Or should we have a round of books showing to the people, or is it just have Bhagavad Gita and if they don't like it, just point them to the other?
Well, let me ask you, what is a bridge in general meant to do?
Connection.
Very philosophical question. What's it supposed to do anyway?
Connect to Prabhupada's books.
No, I'm not talking about bridge books. I'm just talking about bridges. What is the idea behind a bridge? Yeah, more practical than even that. You're still being philosophical. Okay, you tell me, Jishnu.
To go to the other side.
Yeah, go to the other side. You know, go one point to the other point. So, I mean, the idea behind bridge books and any bridge book author would be, like, I'm going to get people to come from here to here. Right? I mean, that's the idea. When we say bridge books, they're not, they're meant to bring people closer to, or to, an, you know, to read Prabhupada's books. That's the idea. So, fortunately, we all have free will. And if you know, everyone likes to distribute different books. You know, in the early days, I remember Vijayatma, he was attached to Nectar Devotion. He was always talking about Nectar Devotion. That's all he distributed, practically, because he liked it so much. And I know Vijay Prabhu, the great sadhu and lifelong book distributor, Brahmachari, he just likes Bhagavad Gita. That's all he ever sells is Bhagavad Gita. But I know other people, too, that they have a taste, or they have a tolerance for distributing in a certain way, because they have a different realization than others, you know, how they've started, how they've approached, so they do a certain way also. So in our teams, I like to encourage people to do what they especially are enthusiastic about, because when a devotee does what he or she likes to do and really has faith in, then it comes out when they're presenting. Like, a lot of times people ask me, and it may be related in a certain way, like, what should I wear when I go out on book distribution? You know, do I have to wear dhoti? And my realization is, after years and years of trying anything and everything, and I do mean that, is wear what you feel comfortable enough in to go out and relate to people as best you can. Having said that, you know, we promote Prabhupada's books especially because they have a place in our hearts. You know, he's the founder of Charya, he gave the books directly and they're available, so we distribute them. Having said that, I don't consider, like, sometimes we get to the Bhagavatam and people end at the 10th canto and the 13th chapter where Prabhupada stops speaking. And they say, well, after that, you know, I don't know if it's Bhagavatam or not. But I actually feel that in a very profound way, it is Prabhupada, because how else would who else would have been able to empower somebody to continue the Bhagavatam in that way and to give purports? And I say, if you take some random purports and you put them next to each other and ask people, okay, you read this one, then you read that one. Tell me, and don't tell them where it's from. Tell me which one's Prabhupada's and which one's somebody else. then I believe they won't be able to tell, really, because of Prabhupada's power. He was able to empower people to write books. The book you mentioned of, what was it called? The Devamrita Swami's book? Oh, The Hidden Glories of India. Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of different books, and you have to find which ones match the best. We do mostly promote Prabhupada's books, but in certain cases, like I was downtown San Francisco, and I was distributing with a devotee who was watching me, and I was presenting Bhagavad Gita, and three times in a row, after people took the Bhagavad Gita, they said, actually, I don't want this one, I want that one. And they wanted the Higher Taste Cookbook. And I was a little frustrated. And this devotee who was watching, it was a new devotee, he said, don't worry. He said, that's how I became a devotee. I read the Higher Taste. He said, I read the Higher Taste, and I saw the excerpts from this person, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, and I said, who is that? And then I went to wanted to read his books. So just the main points are, you know, distribute what really inspires you. And we're always bridging towards getting people to take the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and bringing them to Prabhupada's teachings. But the way in which you do that depends on your personal style a lot. However, there are some mandates I know that Vijay tried to make. I don't know if everyone follows them, but there's some percentage. This many Prabhupada books and that many. But if devotees are really together in an organization, in a team, and they're reading together a lot, and they're realizing what's in Prabhupada's books, they have no hesitancy at all to present his books to the public. I think it's people get mental sometimes about it, and they'll think people won't understand it or something like that. So thank you very much for coming out here on a rainy Texas evening to this beautiful center, and I love what you've done with the place, the lights, the artwork, everything's so neat and clean and beautiful. It's a nice space, and you devotees are amazing. I mean, this community is really powerful, and Austin, this is the next big thing. I mean, it's already a big thing what you're doing here, but keep doing it. Keep taking care of each other and hearing and chanting. And by all means, extend yourself as and take risks to distribute Krishna consciousness as much as possible, because you'll never be disappointed. And also, when you do, it's a high sadhana that will help you develop in Krishna consciousness, and it'll increase your taste for hearing and chanting. And when kids get involved in distributing books, do you guys go out? Book distribution? Okay, you can go up to Dallas this weekend, we'll all go out. When kids go out and learn how to do book distribution, they get an education that you won't get anywhere else in the world. It's better than an MBA, it's better than a PhD. They learn how to learn how to communicate to all kinds of people. They see how the modes of nature work. They get exposed to every kind of culture, going door to door and seeing people. And they also learn how to face rejection, and that's something that some people never learn. The first time that our kids party went out, Kameshwari took them out officially, and they were out going door to door together. And one of the places they went rejected and closed the door. And she could see the kids were really distraught. Any of you like to get rejected? One person. You're a powerful devotee. They all went and sat in the playground, and they talked about it for about a half hour. What just happened? What did it mean? What didn't it mean? All these kinds of things. And afterwards, the kids were empowered. And, you know, they've been doing it, some of them, for 16 years. Since they were born, they were doing it. And they become extremely dedicated, and also they're fortified and knowledgeable, and they learn about all different aspects of material and spiritual life just from doing sankirtan. So keeping that as the tip of the spear of your thrust for the organization is very effective. because it's also following the order of the Acharya, and it'll bring great mercy. Gopremanande Haribo.
Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.